24 hours ago, you know, Fran Fraschilla was saying that, hey, no matter, you know, he thought that they had done enough to get in. Of course, he's calling Big 12 games, and maybe he's looking on the positive side. But even Joe Lunardi, when I woke up this morning, Gideon, he had him as one of the last two teams in. And then within an hour or two, Matt tells me now he's got him as the first team out. But what are your thoughts on what you saw last night, Gideon?
Oh, it wasn't too much different than what we've seen all season long, especially after Avery Anderson went out. But with Oklahoma State, if you can get up on them early, you know there's an inevitable 6.5, 7 minute long drought without them making a shot. And so, especially if you're up on them early and that eventually comes throughout the game, you're going to win. And that's kind of what we've seen in almost every Oklahoma State loss. It's also what we've seen in every Oklahoma State win, except they're more competitive early in the game. Maybe they get up by a significant margin, 9, 10, 11, or something like that. And then when that drought inevitably happens in the game, a team is able to draw closer but not quite scale the mountain. So the one thing that you can say about these Big 12 teams is you look at some of their out-of-conference games, and really when they're not playing each other, they've excelled. The offense looks a lot better, and so you wonder, hey, if you give them a chance in the tournament, what does that look like? But in terms of, you know, just earning an opportunity for Oklahoma State, it's going to come down to the committee arbitrarily setting a number, whether that's conference record or amount of conference teams to come out of this league that is going to get them in. Because team versus team, I don't know how that's going to work out for Oklahoma State. But if they're like, hey, this is the best league in the country, and they should have, you know, set number of teams. Or if you go 8-10 in the league, you should be in. That's how they're going to get in.
And, Brad, it's hard to win when you have, what, 6 more turnovers than made field goals?
Well, and it's hard to win when you go 3 of 21 from three-point range, and overall you shoot 20. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say 27%. It was actually 26.9. You're just not going to win like that. Now, in terms of getting in the tournament, I still think there's a pretty good chance that OSU could get in because they did have a good record in the Big 12. They had 8 wins in the Big 12, and the Big 12 is a tough conference. So I think it's possible that they still get in, but, I mean, I don't hold out a whole lot of hope unless they can do something drastically different than they've done in the last 8 games. How long has it been since we've seen them really play a good game? I mean, they didn't play a good game when they beat Oklahoma. They beat them, but Oklahoma just played a worse game than OSU did.
Well, and they won in Lubbock. I mean, that was a nice win. I know Texas Tech, I'm not trying to build them up into something that they aren't, but in Lubbock they were really good. And so, but I'm with you, Brad. No, I mean, you lose 5 in a row, and that's the shame of it, Gideon. That's what we were just saying is you look at it back, you know, in a couple of weeks ago, they were sitting at 16-9 midway through the league race maybe a month or so ago, and then they lost 5 straight, beat Tech and OU. Now you lose this one, and it was kind of an ugly loss, although Texas is really a good team, guys.
Texas is a really good team.
Yeah, playing without Timmy Allen. Gideon, I mean, what do you think of this Texas team, Gideon?
Well, I think they're pretty good. I think on any given day they could probably beat any other team in the league. And in terms of making a run, I think they probably have a little bit more shooting than most of the other teams in this league, too, to where you could put that together along with their toughness and their defense. So, I mean, would I guarantee that they would make an Elite Eight run or something like that? I don't know if I'd go that far, but I'd feel pretty confident in them making the second weekend in the tournament. I know everybody would put them in there anyway because it's a 2-seed, but that's a lot easier said than done with this tournament.
Well, and that's the thing about last night was Texas won this thing going away without their two best scorers. I mean, Sir Jabari Rice, now a lot of times he's coming off the bench, but like we said with Timmy Allen not starting, he's in the starting lineup. But Rice and Carr, you could make a case that that's their two best shooters. And they go 6 for 23 from the field and 1 for 8 from three. So that their two best shooters didn't even shoot the ball well last night. Heck, Texas only shot 37% from the field, and they only made 6 out of 19 threes. And so it wasn't like they were any offensive machine last night. But when you hold OSU to 47 points and 21 in the second half, Texas I will give the Cowboys credit. They came back. I mean, they could have been routed in this game, and they did come back to make it respectable at the end. And, guys, we talked earlier. I thought that was pretty cheap on Marcus Carr putting up that shot at the buzzer last night.
Yep.
What was that? After dribbling it down and everyone's walked away, and he shoots it right at the buzzer. That was pretty weak. I know he was having a terrible shooting night, 1 for 9, but 2 for 10 doesn't sound a whole lot better than 1 for 9.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we're not that far away from Texas being highly considered a number one seed, and I heard what you and the coach were talking about at the end of the hour last hour. I agree with – I think both of you guys said this. I think if they make a run in this tournament and win the Big 12 tournament, I think they very well could elevate back to a number one seed, depending on how strongly the committee feels about the other number one seeds. But Texas is not anybody to sleep on. I think that sometimes – And I'm going to be completely honest. This was the second night in a row that I've checked out because I was just bored with the game. And I found something else that I was more interested in watching. But I think sometimes, especially this time of year when you know you got something big coming, that you play down to that level of competition. For most of that game, Oklahoma State was playing so poorly and they were shutting them down to the point that Texas didn't need to score a whole lot. I mean, I think I would like to think that they would be embarrassed by those shooting percentages that you mentioned, but they didn't really need to shoot better than that because Oklahoma State was playing so poorly.
And OSU did out-rebound them 45-33. OSU had 15 offensive rebounds, 15-6 on the offensive glass for OSU, like they always do, right, Gideon? With Cisse,
oh, yeah.
This Tyreek Smith, I mean, you could make a case that Caleb Boone was the only one that showed up last night for the Cowboys. But if you say two guys showed up, you'd have to throw Tyreek Smith in there. He did have 7 rebounds last night, 4 offensive. I mean, I think he's played well for him. But none of their – I mean, when your two best shooters, Gideon, or Asbury and Bryce Thompson, go 5 for 20 and 1 for 9 from 3, you're just not going to win many games, right? So –
No, it's what we've seen all year long. You think that those two big guys, the problem is they can't space the floor, so there's no room for them to operate. Also, they have no kind of touch or anything like that to where they can operate away from the basket. So if there was a semblance of, you know, some motion offensively or enough guys that you had to pay attention to on the perimeter, then obviously the offense would flow a lot better, but that's not the case.
And here's the thing. Okay. I mean, assuming that Oklahoma State does get in, and I think there's still a really good chance that they could get into the field, the way that this team has played recently, obviously if you can get into the tournament, you want to reward your guys and they get a trip to the tournament. But I don't hold out hope that this team is going to surprise anybody once the tournament starts. I don't think they're going to be any different a week from now or a week and a half from now than they were this week.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, not finishing strong with the 5 straight losses. We'll see what happens with the Cowboys, but we do know that TCU will be playing that Texas team tonight. TCU 80-67 win over K-State. Gideon, how good is this team? I mean, remember they struggled without Mike Miles. What, they lost 4 out of those 5 games that they were without him. So,
yeah,
their conference record
looks like
is 9-9.
Looks like a completely different team.
So, I mean, he had 22 last night. O'Bannon had 22. How good is this TCU team, Gideon?
They're really, really good when he's on the floor. Some of those results were shocking how much of a difference he made between when he was gone and as soon as he was back in the lineup, they started to win again. And so I think TCU is right there, kind of in that conversation. I think there are probably – We saw some interesting results this season in terms of how deep this team was, how competitive. Even some of the teams that were 5th, 6th, 7th, could jump up and bite you at any given time and even competed well on the road against some of those top teams in the league. I think TCU is really, really good, and wherever they end up in the tournament, I think a lot of people will pick them to make a deep run as well.
And TCU was favored in that game. You know, it's TCU traveled a lot further than K-State had to travel. K-State's ranked higher than them in the overall polls right now, and TCU was still favored in that game. TCU's a lot better than I think some people think they are.
Yeah, better than their record. It's because they went 1-4 without Miles. Yeah, exactly right, Brad.
And Kansas State. Now, Kansas State is a team I would keep an eye on the tournament the other way because I don't think they'll let them play those games in Manhattan.
Well, they're so up and down. I mean, they are just – it's hard
they're
to
– They're like the Warriors.
It's Marquise
Noel. It's like they have some kind of mental block about playing on the road.
Well, and also Marquise Noel, this guy – I mean, he thinks he's Steph Curry with where he shoots some of these shots from Gideon. I mean, he will put it up from 30 in a heartbeat. And when he's on, it is something to watch, and I am in. But last night, yesterday, he goes 1-for-9 from 3, 5-for-13, and so he can shoot him out of games also. They went 7-for-30 from 3, 23% from 3. They're a lot better team than what they showed yesterday, but that's a good point, Gideon, that – Maybe they're just more of a force in Manhattan. I do have more confidence in TCU than K-State, and they showed it last night, 80-67 TCU. The other semifinal is Iowa State going up against Kansas. Guys, Gideon, I'll start with you here. I mean, to beat Baylor three times, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, no, that was an important win for them. We thought at the time that was might have been an important win for Oklahoma State also to make them look a little bit better because of their win against Iowa State. But I like this team. I don't know necessarily about the tournament, and I definitely don't know about today. I don't think they're going to win today. Obviously, there's a distraction there with Coach Self not on the bench. But Iowa State's kind of been up and down for me. You have the departure from the team a few games ago, which seems like it provided a little bit of clarity and a lack of distraction for themselves. I really like the Jayhawks today. Cyclones in the tournament might be a tough out, I don't see him going much further than this.
Iowa State looked good yesterday against Baylor. I mean, it's not like that game was Baylor taking time off and slacking. That game went back right and forth, and we had it on where I was yesterday, and I was able to watch most of the game, and that was a good game, back and forth, and they fought hard. And Iowa State is one of those teams you really don't know from one game to the next what they're going to look like, but when they look good, they're capable of playing with anybody. So I agree with you. I think Kansas, even without Bill Self on the bench, this is sort of how I felt about the game yesterday, and we now know that Bill's not going to be on the bench for Kansas through the Big 12 tournament, however far Kansas goes. But I think Kansas still should be able to handle Iowa State. But Iowa State's not a team to sleep on for sure.
Well, and they ended the year, okay, they had beaten Kansas, ironically, by 15 points, and at that point they were 7-3 in conference, you know, and highly ranked. Well, then, from that point on, they lose 6 out of 7 games. The only victory in that stretch was that they did beat TCU one time, and I think that was TCU without Miles, but they lose 6 out of 7, so they were finishing kind of like OSU. And then all of a sudden, last Saturday, like Gideon said, after kicking Caleb Grill off the team, they were saying, and you know, not a joking matter, they were saying he was dealing with some mental issues. I don't know what happened there. But anyway, all of a sudden, they beat Baylor by 15 at Baylor in that last game of the regular season last Saturday, and then to turn around and beat them for a third time in the conference tournament opener, that's an impressive bounce back from a team that had lost 6 out of 7 games and looked dead in the water. So, and they did beat this Kansas team the one time, like we said, by 15 points at home. And like we said, guys, they had Kansas down big time at Allen Fieldhouse, and then the Jayhawks stormed back and got a 2-point victory out of it. And so, I don't know. Iowa State, their toughness, I think they're tough enough to give them a game tonight, especially without Bill Self. So we'll see what happens. But what do you think?
I don't see it happening. I think Kansas is going to win this game. I don't know what the line is. But I just think they're playing with it looks like Kansas is playing with purpose right now and is playing with a lot of composure toward the end of the season. I think this is some of the best basketball that they have played throughout the year. Not every single game, but just over the grand scheme of things, kind of a rocky road there early on in conference play, and I think they're playing well at the perfect time.
I agree,
Brad,
with you,
no
Gideon.
Upset tonight?
No, I agree with what Gideon said. I think that Kansas elevated over the course of the season. I think they're playing now like a team that is should be a number one seed, like they will be, because there was a moment there during the season that kind of came into question. They look like a number one seed now, and they look like a team that's on their way to another Final Four. I mean, it's possible because this Iowa State team is capable of playing at that level, but I would be really surprised to see Kansas lose today. I just think that they're head and shoulders above everybody else right now.
And they are still playing for a possible number one overall seed. I mean, they do have more quad one wins than anyone else in the country. So that's
but Craig's calling for the upset, and that's fine, Craig.
On where they're going to be playing.
That's a bold
I do kind of have a feeling that there's going to be an upset tonight, but I'm just saying that Kansas is – they aren't just mailing it in. They've still got a lot to play for.
I'm going to hold off predicting until next hour when Sam Humphries comes in, because he was the one that locked down Kansas yesterday when the line moved. So I'm going to defer my opinion to until I get back up from Sam.
All right. And he, I guess he also liked Texas on that, but the point spread didn't come into play on that last shot by Texas. They were only favored by what, six or six and a half guys in that game, and they got the last second shot to win by 14 and instead of 12 or whatever it was last.
Yeah, night. The thing I'm looking All at right. shows Texas by six and a half.
Six. Oh, you know what? On that Texas game, I just noticed this. Wait a second. Was 60 or 61? Because I'm looking on ESPN.
What
the
I've
game
got
story.
Is 60.
Okay, and I got it 60 on the box score. On their game story, on the AP story, they got it 61. They must have given him a three on that last shot. I think it was only a two.
You met Lala Kent on Vanderpump Rules. Now Lala and her friends share everything on Give Them Lala.
I'm expecting my second child. Which is very, very amazing.
Congratulations.
To say. Feels
We're
that
all
way.
With child.
You can say she's pregnant, she's knocked up, anything except with child.
Oh, I love with child. I'm going to be saying it all the time. Yep. Excuse
yes,
me.
Yes, yes.
6 feet, I'm with child.
Watch what Lala is talking about on YouTube or search for Give Them Lala wherever you listen.
Golden State first game and the aftermath of that game last night. But, guys, I look at the injuries right now in the West. This is crazy. I mean, you got LeBron out with the foot injury, and I'm not saying the Lakers are a threat to win the West or anything, but I think they could still make the play-in even without LeBron. I mean, if Anthony Davis plays like he has been. Zion's still out with the hamstring. Durant's out with the ankle now. Luka's out with the thigh injury. John Morant's away from the team. You got a lot of moving parts here, guys. But I want to get your thoughts on the West as a whole. But also, let's start with the game last night where Memphis just put it on Golden State. And, Gideon, one of the big debates that we've had recently is Mark says Golden State's just going to flip the switch. He says they're the team to beat. He puts them number one as the team to beat in the West. But then Memphis puts it on them by 31, and I'm looking at this team and going, I'm not seeing it right now with Golden State. Gideon, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, you almost have to trick yourself into thinking that when they play on the road that this is San Antonio. This is Houston. That's how bad they are. It's like the guys in the jersey don't matter. It doesn't really matter what they do. That's how poorly they perform on the road defensively. They're right up there with those teams as well. They need to get Andrew Wiggins back. Hopefully everything is okay with him, but he's one of the guys who at least try to stay in front of someone. In terms of Mark's comments on the playoffs, look, it would worry me that they're the road team in a seven-game series, but let's say, you know, Curry and Thompson shoot the lights out and they've got some other contributions. You know, they score a game two win on the road, and then all of a sudden they kind of have control of the series. The other part of that argument is, are they good enough to defend to win every game that they play at home? And I just don't know that. I think they've been outscoring some teams at home just based on momentum, comfort, and things like that. So I have always been a believer in Golden State this season, even when they were sub-500, even when they were beneath the play-in line. I would say don't worry, they're going to be back, they're going to be back. But they need Wiggins on the floor, and they need to win like two games on the road before the season ends just to have some confidence. The other thing is, These are the first two of a series of 7 out of 9 games on the road. They might need to win a couple of games on the road to get in the playoffs, to get in the top six, or to be where they don't have to fight their way to get in. Imagine if they have to play, you know, in the 8-9 game and have to go on the road for that one. I don't know if I like their chances.
It's weird that a team as pedigreed as they are, because, I mean, there's nobody else. There's really nobody else even in the association that matches up with them in terms of experience. They've got dynamic playmakers. But you're right. They're not playing very good defense, and they're just garbage on the road. I mean, there's no explanation for why they can win at home, but they can't go on the road and win anything more than they're winning. I will say this, though. Because of what the things that I just said, the experience, the playmakers that they've got, if they get a couple of breaks, and this is assuming they make it into the play-in, they're not a team to look past, because they obviously have the experience and the know-how to do it. And those injury situations with other teams also lines up in their favor if they can stay healthy.
I've never seen a team win a championship with a road record that bad. I can't remember one. Maybe you guys can come up with one.
Well, I'll tell you this. I was watching ESPN this morning, and the trivia question was, when was the last team, and I can't remember if it was the top two or the top three, but it was, when was the last time a team outside of either the top three or the two or the top three seeds went to the Western Conference Finals? And do you know who it was?
No.
It was Dallas. The Mavericks were the last time.
Oh, last year. Went to the Western Conference Finals outside of the top two or three seeds, you're saying?
Exactly.
Yeah, last
yes.
year.
They
yeah.
were a four seed.
Yeah, I got you. Well, listen, I mean, no, that you can make a case for any of, like, six different teams right now, maybe more than that. But before we get away from Golden State Memphis, I got to get your thoughts on Draymond versus Dillon Brooks. And last night, Dillon Brooks tries to bait him into a technical foul because Draymond has 15 and number 16 would give him a one-game suspension. Draymond says, I get technical fouls when I want to get technical fouls. I don't get baited into technical fouls, you know. And then they had Draymond had the little debate on, he says, you know, Memphis, they think that we have a rivalry here. And Draymond says, to have a rivalry, you got to have one team win and then the other team has to win. That's what creates the rivalry. And he says, clearly, we've won four times. I think their organization has zero championships, so I can't consider that a rivalry. And then they get into the Draymond podcast where, what did he call him, guys? An idiot and a clown or whatever.
Right.
And so they were getting Dillon Brooks' side of all of that, and Dillon Brooks says, me, I try to score. I try to figure out plays. The ironic thing is Draymond outscored him last night. So even though Memphis won the game big last night, I thought Draymond got the better of the post-game debate. Where do you guys stand on that, Gideon?
There was one punch landed by Dillon because Draymond Green in his podcast said that Dillon Brooks' teammates don't even like him. And Dillon, after the game, said, I'm not out there getting into physical altercations with my teammates,
yeah,
alluding
that,
to
right.
you know, Draymond
right.
Green punching
yeah.
Jordan.
That was
so,
a knockdown.
So he landed one against Draymond. But for the most part, the thing that emerges from all of this is, you know, Golden State just being in disarray in the standings, and if they can win enough games to keep their head above water. And for Memphis, that's an important win for them. They were the 96 Bulls without Ja a couple of seasons ago. They couldn't lose without him, but obviously they were kind of scuffling, and they'd rather be two than three right now. So that was a nice win for them.
Brad, what are your thoughts on the Draymond Dillon Brooks?
Well, the two most unlikable guys in the NBA going at it, and and oddly enough, I find Dillon Brooks to be the most hateable guy in the NBA, and I take Draymond's side in this. I mean, even the punch that was, I'm out there trying to score. Draymond doesn't need to score. He's got scorers on the team. That's what I think makes him the secret sauce of that team, is what he does besides scoring. And I think he's every bit as important as any other piece on that Golden State team, which is why I want them to do better this year. Because if for some reason at some point they do get split up, I don't know that I mean, those Steph and Clay will still be hitting long shots, but I don't know that they will be as deadly as they are when they've got Draymond on the floor doing what he does. But I don't really like either one of those guys. And so if I'm picking a side, I dislike Dylan Brooks more than Draymond, so I'm going to take Draymond's side, but I don't feel good about it.
One of the problems with Dylan is he's trying to score. I think maybe that's one of the reasons why his teammates don't like him very much.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Players Championship. Chad Ramey, the overnight leader out of Mississippi State. He's 8 under par. He'll tee off this afternoon. Morikawa shot 7 under yesterday. Tees off later. The two big stories this morning, one of them, Gideon, and you were bringing me up to date during the break on our man Victor Hovland, who had it to 8 under, was actually tied for the lead after he went 5 under in his first 11 holes today. But then Victor down the stretch, and he played the back nine first. So front nine, his second nine this morning, and he had a double at 4, bogeyed 5, bogeyed 8, only parred the par 5 ninth. So he goes 4 over on his last 6 holes to fall to 4 under par. He's still tied for 6 right now, but he ends up only shooting 1 under in a round where he had it to 5 under. And then the other interesting story, guys, and another guy who fell back, Ben Griffin, who played his college golf at North Carolina. And Ben Griffin, he also had it to 8 under par for the golf tournament. He doubled number 18, his final hole today. But, Gideon, we were talking off the air. This Ben Griffin is one of the more interesting stories I've seen because he stepped away from the game back in the spring and summer of 2021. That's just 2 years ago. He stepped away from the game of golf. And he was working as a loan officer for a mortgage group in North Carolina.
From he had loans to leaderboard.
Yeah. And, I mean, to go from working with some mortgage company and 2 years later you're tied for the lead in the Players or whatever, I mean, that's and also his great-granddad was a roommate of Babe Ruth for the old Yankees.
Wow.
His great-granddad. That's a pretty good story.
That I didn't know.
So, all right. But anyway, we'll keep you updated on the Players throughout the day. All right, I wanted to finish up on the NBA, though, guys, because we were talking off the air. The West is just, you could make a case for so many teams. I know Gideon's in love with the Clippers, right, Gideon?
No, my gosh.
But seriously, with Durant's injury, we talked about all the injuries. But the Sacramento Kings, Gideon, another team I want to talk about. They beat the Knicks last night. The Knicks have been red hot. They've cooled a little bit the last few games. And the Knicks are another story like Barrett and Randall. If those are your two best guys, which I know I don't consider them their two best players because Brunson is easily one of their two best players. R.J. Barrett I just don't trust. But I'm just saying Barrett and Randall go 17 for 45 last night and 3 for 20 from 3. 3 for 20. That's one
of those
reason
are OSU numbers.
Yeah, I don't trust the Knicks that much, but on the Sacramento Kings. So the Kings win it last night, 122-117. Gideon, where are you on the Sacramento Kings? Because all of a sudden they've gone from, well, that's a nice story this year, and, yeah, they're a playoff team, and then they're number 3, and then they're number 2 or whatever. Right now they're 39-26, Gideon. Where are you on the Kings?
Yeah, look, I mean, in terms of my favorite teams to watch in the NBA, there aren't too many teams that are higher, maybe none higher than Sacramento. In terms of playoff performance, I mean, 122-117, 128-127, 123-117, 176-175, 133-128, all of those are wins. There's just way too many of those, and part of that shows that, hey, in critical moments, in close games, this team can score, and that can put them over the top. But over the course of a series where teams can game plan for specific things that you do, I just don't know, Craig. I think it's really going to depend on the matchup that they get in the first round as to whether or not they advance in the playoffs. I hope they do, because I think the atmosphere in Sacramento is going to be electrifying. I like that the team is, you know, kind of bought in, and finally there's some excitement around there. But, gosh, they have won a bunch of those types of games this year, and it makes me very, very nervous for postseason.
Brad, who do you like in the West right now?
I think they're the new – well, I want to talk about Sacramento for a second. I think they're the new Denver Nuggets. And the Nuggets still have to prove that they can take that next step. But the Nuggets have been a team that have been good, that have had some good playmakers, but they just can't get it done in the playoffs. And I think Sacramento's going to have to prove themselves. But I will say this, they got a lot of playmakers. De'Aaron Fox just went off last night. He was everywhere. They've got guys that if somebody is down on a night, guys can step in and make big plays. Now, does that translate to winning in the playoffs? I don't know, but I still think that they are a team, and the as Gideon was saying, the atmosphere in Sacramento is going to be outstanding. I'm going to say, Craig, in terms of who I like in the West, I think that Golden State could turn the corner if they can get into the playoffs. Everybody's healthy. Wiggins comes back. I think they're a team you got to watch out for. If KD gets healthy, I think Phoenix is going to be really, really dangerous. But I think Denver so far this season has proven what they hadn't proven in the past. Now, that's putting a lot of credit to Jokic that he's going to be able to step up in the playoffs in a way that is meaningful. But I do like the fact Jamal Murray has been healthy this year. He's been contributing. There's a reason they're the number one seed, and they're not going to fall out of that number one seed spot. So I'm still kind of high on them. I know that's a meaningless answer when I tell you the top two teams in the conference are the ones that I'm watching. I don't pick one or the other, but I think either one of those teams could prove that they deserve to be where they are.
That's going to be fascinating. I mean, Denver's been up there also, and Denver's got the 6.5 game lead. By the way, Sacramento and Memphis right now tied for second. And then Phoenix in the number four spot right now. Right now you got the Clippers 5, Golden State 6, Minnesota 7, Dallas 8, the Lakers 9, New Orleans 10. The West is just going to be crazy over the next month.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.